Hello and welcome to the webinar. My name is Jeff McDonald, and particularly a warm welcome to the people that are new to my webinars today, and a warm welcome to some people that have been on them previously. So today we're doing a version of the Book Wrapper series where we take what I consider to be an important book, and we do a bit of a summary of it and try to give you a way to use the information from the book, and we'll do that in the webinar. So after the webinar, you'll have some access to the audio and the slides, and there'll also be a video where you get the audio and the slides together as well, so you can review it or share it or talk about it with a colleague as well. So today we're talking about how to captivate your clients with killer content, and you can see the book, we're doing it there on content rules, highly recommended. So a little bit about me. Some of you may know me through Book Wrapper, some of you may know me as the Ideas Architect, and today we're coming to you from Ideas Marketing. And basically what I provide is a service around helping people design, build and sell their ideas. And you can follow us on Twitter at Ideas Marketing. If you've got questions, feel free to type them in. And if there's something not working for you in terms of audio or image, type that in too, because obviously I need it today. Part one, we'll jump right in. How content are you? So let's get started. What we're talking about is content marketing, and probably the best way to start is, what's content? And this is a very broad general definition. So it's really anything you're uploading to your website. So it could be your web copy, it could be your blog, it could be a video to YouTube, it could be an audio, it could be a slideshow to SlideShare, it could be a tweet, it could be a status update to LinkedIn. These are all forms of content. And essentially, content marketing is wherever you're sharing information to attract customers. So previously, we might have done some advertising where you're presenting a particular slice about your business to attract customers. And now the game's changed where we're generally sharing information rather than just directly selling. Certainly part of the sales and influence channel. And here's really the frame I think we need to work from today. Welcome to your publishing business. You might not have this on your business card and you might not even thought about that, but as soon as you start participating in content marketing, effectively you've got a publishing business. Or at least if you're a mega organization, you might go, "Ooh, I've got a business unit, a publishing business unit." So as an expert in your area, ideally an infopreneur or a speaker or a coach or something along those lines, you're going to have some content or some expertise that you know about. And effectively what this whole strategy is about is packaging up your expertise and publishing it to attract business to you. And that's what we're talking about today. So I've got a poll today. So I've only experimented with this once before, so let's see how this goes. So how much of your sales are influenced by what you publish? So I'll launch the poll now, and it should give you four answers. So give you a short time to tick one of those. So you might say you're not doing any publishing, so that'd be none of the following. Or you might be doing a lot of publishing or just very effective publishing, and a lot of your sales are influenced. And notice I didn't say what sales are you getting from your publishing. So you might be publishing a book and earning direct sales, but more likely what you're publishing is influencing people to work with you. So I'll give you another 10 seconds there. It looks like most people have voted. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Okay, we'll close the poll and let's have a look at the results. So share the results. So a bit of a mixed view. A couple of people probably at the most and many level and most at the lower level. So my sense of that, 30%, a third of you probably are not doing a lot of publishing, and the others are probably doing some publishing and probably just not getting the results you might or could be getting. So thanks for that. So hopefully we'll give you a few clues on how you can improve your effectiveness there. So my example, I'm probably in about many of my clients come to me from what I've published, primarily through the Book Wrapper stuff. Interestingly for me, I think a lot of my clients tend to come through as referrals, but then when they've either seen my material as part of that referral or they've been referred by someone, and when they realise who I am and what I've done previously, they go, oh, okay. So it becomes almost a recommendation that they've seen some of the earlier book wrapper stuff in particular. So let's keep moving. So the book. Oh. Okay, I'm having one of those days. Looks like Camtasia's just crashed again. I'll just do a sidelight here. One of the things I talk about is that you need to have products, and one of the keys around your products is to have them public. And I've been using Camtasia and telling people in the previous webinars about, you know, using Camtasia to... Well, there we go. Okay, it's just spat the dummy again. Sorry, folks. Don't save. So I've been using Camtasia the last 3 or 4 times, and it actually crashed 4 out of the last times I've used it. So that is not a very good advertisement for Camtasia right now. So maybe I'll have to either get my money back or switch across to ScreenFlow as being something more substantial. So when you're doing things in public and it keeps going wrong, it's not a very good advertisement for your what your products and services are. So you need to get that right. Okay, so the book we're talking about is written by Anne Handley and C.C. Chapman. And when I look at this, I always like to find photos of the authors and that have a bit of personality. And I reckon with this one, they're sort of a bit over cheeky. And what I found was, I did a bit more digging and I found this photo as well. And I reckon the one on the right happened first, and then the other one on the left was done later, and they were trying to keep a straight face. But what I love about this, and this is almost one of the content rules, that I really think personality rules. At the end of the day, it's nice to have some good content, but there's so much of it on Google. It's the personality of you and being your brand is way more important. And I think maybe this is the best lesson from the book or the webinar today, is have some fun and personality around what you're doing. Because why else would you do it? You know, if it's dull and boring for you, it's going to be dull and boring for, you know. And Anne Handley's actually got a highly influential person on social media. In 2009 or 2008, she was ranked the most influential woman on social media in the world, which is quite stunning. So I've been following her on Marketing Profs for a while, and she knows what she's doing. And again, from a personality point of view, here's part of her summary about who she is. And I'll just read it out for the audio people listening on audio. I live near Boston in a slightly creaky, comfortable house with 2 kids, 4 dogs, good coffee in the kitchen, decent wine in the cellar, a stack of New Yorkers by the bed, and an occasional field mouse in the laundry room. And I think, again, this is part of be you, show your personality, and have some fun along the way. And here's C.C. Chapman. I think his real name is Charles, but C.C., it's almost CCC, isn't it? Yeah. So he pretty much, in the research I've done, comes from a music background. He has his own Wikipedia page, which is always pretty cool. Looks good on the CV. Done a lot of podcasting. Started up Digital Dads in the US, and that's been very successful. And I was fortunate enough to have a few tweets with CC coming into this webinar, and I asked him if there was anything that he wanted me to promote. And he said, more speaking, more consulting. So there it is. Get him along to your gigs to do more speaking, more consulting. And I think those other photos, I think I come back to there. I reckon they'd be fun to work with. So I think that's important when you're choosing the people you want to work with. You want to enjoy the people you want to work with. So that's a little bit about the background of the book, the authors. There's my 5-word summary. I think it's pretty much that content has become the new advertising. Most of us are totally sick of being sold to. We want to be informed or educated instead, and that's why I think this book's so important. And I also recommend that if you're doing anything around content marketing, and I think most of us should be doing that, then you really want to have a copy of this book sitting on your desk next to you, because it's got a lot of checklists, it's got a lot of tips, a lot of suggestions, and some good frames for why and how to build your content empire. So get the book. So let's get into it. Some of the content rules that are in the book. So the first one, it's not just about going blah, 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 blah. If you're not out there solving someone's problems, then, you know, you're just going to have limited impact. And I think this comes back to that old cliche about Twitter, when someone says, oh, I just ate a hamburger for lunch, or I just went to the toilet, or I just went to the shops or whatever. It's like, that's nice from a personality point, but I think there's a way to blend that personality stuff into educating and assisting and entertaining and also ultimately solving problems, because that's what business is really about. If I can help you get your results, then I'll get rewarded along the way, and the same applies to your content. Next one, and I just love this analogy, that the old way of doing advertising was really about pull marketing, where you've put out something and you're trying to draw the customer. Push marketing. I've just got that round the wrong way. Push marketing, where you're trying to push out all the message. Whereas content marketing is really opposite. And I think the analogy, we've all been out in summer and we've turned the light on, and the mosquitoes in particular have just come from nowhere. And it's a bit like, where did that happen? You know, and pretty much the web's the same thing. If you're putting out really good content, then you're likely to attract people. The search engine will pick it up because other people are liking it. You'll get some social media juice because other people are retweeting your message and so forth. They'll start passing it on, and that's what good content's about. It's an attraction process. And leading on from that is, if you're writing really great content, then you really don't have to be doing a lot of promotional activity or any extra promotional activity, because if it's really good, people will be passing it on. And the ultimate version of that is if you can get a viral campaign. And I often get a lot of people asking me, how do I do a viral campaign? And to be honest, well, I've never done one, so I'm probably not the person to answer it anyway. And from what I have seen and heard, I think it's more, there's certainly an element of luck in there. There's some things you can do about it, but I don't think that's really the goal. I think it's, if you hit the jackpot, that's a bit like winning Tats Lotto. If you hit the jackpot, fantastic. But it's more likely just keep sharing your content to get your customers to spread the word, and it will build its own certain mass of people. And once that happens and people start to see you out there, that's the benefit you'll get. So ideally what we're trying to do is position ourselves so when someone mentions our topic or the problem that we solve, someone goes, ah, you want to go see him or you want to go see her. And that's part of what we're doing. If you help enough people, they'll come back and help you. Next rule is, I think you need to really think about the content you're providing and the way that it's going to be shared. Probably the best lesson for me around Book Wrapper, when I first started doing Book Wrapper, the original decision I made was to make it into a PDF. And whilst in the early days I was actually selling subscriptions, so basically I was saying you buy access to that PDF, I knew that as soon as I put it in PDF form, other people would be sharing it to other people. And whilst that meant I didn't get the direct revenue from it, it did mean that the content would be packaged up in a way that it could be passed on. And at the end of the day, I think that's more important sometimes than the dollars in the short term. So design your information and your content to be shared by other people. And having people share it is actually a good thing. Remember, we're about spreading the word here, and as long as enough of it comes back to you so you can make your living doing what you're doing, fantastic. You don't have to make sales off every piece of content you put out there. Next one sort of follows from the last one. It's, I think, becomes more of a strategy about how you do your content. And so the idea of the building blocks, if you put the small building blocks and you might do something daily so it builds up into something. And conversely, once you've built it up into something, you want to be able to break it down. So simple example, we've talked about Chris Anderson and the long tail previously. Originally, he wrote one article. So you might say he wrote this block here. He wrote an article in Wired magazine, got a lot of feedback. He started writing a blog. He wrote a few more blog posts. He eventually built it up and it became his best-selling book. And then so taking on a daily action or a weekly action to produce some content can culminate into a bigger product or a bigger process. So, for example, I've been using these webinars to write my content for workshops, and at some point it'll finish up in books. The other way is to sit down and write a massive content and then break it back the other way. So, for example, if you've already got a book, then if the book's 100 pages, there's a good chance you've got 100 pages of content that could be put into 100 different blog posts or perhaps more. So start to think about what your strategy is, because this is a strategic question. Don't just go write randomly. If writing's your thing, don't just do it randomly. Start to think about what do these individual components accumulate into when we're done, and vice versa. If I've got a massive content, how can I break that down to share it? So, for example, you might have a book, becomes a blog post, becomes a series of tweets. It's not about inventing the content from scratch all the time. So I'm just checking the questions there. Yep, all good. So I'll get to some questions in a minute. So thanks, Denise and Louise, for those comments. So, next one. Oh, that picture's gone very funny on the screen here. Go with your strengths. So I think there's lots of people that are so stuck in their own way of doing it that they forget that other people aren't like them. And you'll hear them say things like, everyone must do this, or you've got to be doing webinars, or you've got to be doing blogs, or you've got to be doing this. And it's like, okay, that might actually suit you, but it actually doesn't work for me. And I think the number one thing is around writing. A lot of us are not natural writers. So if you're not a natural writer, you need to find your way of doing the content. So you want to start with being you, because as the old quote goes, you know, you're the best of the world at being you, and have some fun with your personality. But at the end of the day, your content needs to come out of what you're good at, because otherwise you're not going to be able to produce it consistently over time. And I just had to throw a picture of Geelong winning the premiership in, so I'm a Cats supporter for you people who know about the AFL, and we won the premiership this year, completely unexpected, and best of all, it was over Collingwood, so very happy about that. But the whole idea is the marketer with the best content wins, and it goes back to some of what we were saying. If you're producing good content, you're more likely to attract people to you, and if you're producing great content, you're more likely to have other people sharing it for you. And if you can do that, you're going to increase your marketing efforts, and ultimately, if you're doing it well, you're going to increase your sales revenue as well. And that's the name of the game. So produce great content, and that's your best opportunity to market your services and the best way to get results back. Okay, there should have been a question slide in there. I've obviously missed that. So I'll just check. If you've got any questions, feel free to type them in. So a couple of comments there from in response to my breakdown around Camtasia again. So Louise and Denise have suggested that some browsers don't like GoToWebinar, example Google Chrome. And as a fellow Mac user, have I tried ScreenFlow? Well, actually, no. I weighed it up as whether I was going to use ScreenFlow or Camtasia. And in the finish, I went with Camtasia. And it came back to what their free strategy was, which we talked about in our last webinar. And basically, I thought, okay, I can actually run with this for a month and test it out. And it worked pretty fine for a month. But as things would happen, as soon as I paid for it, it started crashing. So I'm not sure what that actually means. But no, I haven't tried ScreenFlow. But given the run I've had with Camtasia the last four or five times, I'm definitely going to be trying ScreenFlow out before our next webinar. Jenny's put in, where is the picture of the All Blacks winning? Nah. Didn't want to do that one. And the aerial football follow league, yeah. So that Louise is probably from New South Wales and talking about rugby league or something there, some other football code, but I know that you all love AFL, so we'll keep going with that. Okay, that's enough comments for the moment. We'll keep going. So one of the things that's in the great about the content rules book is that they've gone through some of the very basic things that I think we need to all be considering in our content marketing. And they've actually got eight of these components here. They're missing a couple, which may come into a future book possibly. So you might read them from the top left. Pod is podcast. PH could be phone, but in this case it's photograph. But certainly the mobile phone is an interesting opportunity coming down the track in the future. Twitter and Facebook's not really in the content rules books, but I'm going to mention that briefly. We've got video. BL stands for blog, and you can see that it's a round circle in the middle of this. So what we're really suggesting is the blog is the hub or the centre of your content marketing strategy. W for webinar. FAQ, frequently asked questions. ST is stories or case studies, and EB is short for ebooks or white papers. So let's just have a quick look at these nine components. So the first one, as I just said, your blog, which includes your newsletter, is really your publishing hub. It's the centre of all your activity. And one of the reasons for that is that it is a very quick, easy way to do it. It's a way for people to interact. And it's also really good for the search engine optimization and attracting people, because each time you publish a blog post, effectively you're creating a page of content that the search engines can pick up. And the other part of that is that And I went to the Darren Rouse, Chris Garrett pro blogger event Friday last week in Melbourne. And they were pretty much talking, the comments through the day were around having your blog as your main piece also. And I guess that's the piece they've based their business in. But they're also saying about using a newsletter as a way to cross-promote your blog, but also to add other content. So I've linked in newsletter and blog as the centre of your publishing hub. Next one is webinars, and I've been playing around with webinars for the last couple of months, and what I loved about Content Rules was that they had about 25 different points of saying, here's what we think you should be doing around your webinars, and I'm pleased to say I reckon I'm doing about 20 of them. So that's one of the benefits of the book. It's got some checklists about some of the things to do in these content areas. And for me, the key piece around the webinar is this before, during and after piece. So before the webinar, you get this chance to package up some information, write some blog posts, do some invitations. And then during the webinar, you actually get a chance to engage with the audience in probably a more live way than writing an ebook. Not quite as good as being in the room in front of people, but certainly we get some interaction, particularly with the question box and me making live mistakes and the technology falling over. So that's all part of the show. So it's a little bit more engaging than just having some of the static things like ebooks. And then the best part is that afterwards, if you can get your video recording to work, which means I'll have to do it again today, but at least from this I've got a set of slides, I've got some audio, and I can put the two back together and actually have a video to show. So it's a beautiful way to have a whole content sequence in one pathway, if you like, or one content delivery method. So I really encourage you to consider webinars because they could be a complete circuit by themselves, and they really give you the chance to do that building block thing. So if I build up a webinar and it's a complete 30-minute show, then I can actually take those chunks out and go, oh, here's a 5-minute version of that, here's the 2-minute version of that, and so forth. So webinars, that's my summary of them. They're great for before, during, and after. Next one is ebooks and white pages. And the basic question that's asked in the book, which I think most of us ask, is, well, what's the difference? What's an ebook and why is that a white paper, you know? So very generally, the white papers are more technical or more specific about very topics. You're almost like they're the academic version of an ebook, whereas the ebook is often a little bit more popular, probably a few more graphics, that sort of thing. And I know that's a really loose distinction, and to some extent I don't think it matters whether it's an ebook or white papers. I think the key is, what does your audience call them? So if you're in the maybe the professional service firms where they use white papers as the title, well, you want to use that title. If you're in the more public space and people call them ebooks, you want to use that. And the other big question about ebooks and white papers is, should I give it away for free or should I get people to register before I give it to them? And the two circles I've drawn here try to demonstrate what the different results will do. So on the left-hand side, we pretty much got a big circle, but we got holes in it. And that's meant to represent that if I do just give away the ebook and no one needs to register for it, well, I'm probably going to spread the information much wider. So I'm going to build a bigger sphere of influence. However, the connections between those people are going to be less tight. So, for example, I actually don't know who downloaded it, and I don't necessarily have a direct line back to being able to communicate with them and ask them whether they liked it or not, or invite them to another event, or even give them another one. So you might reach a bigger circle, but it's also a loose circle, a loose connection to them. Whereas on the right, if we look at if people have to register to get your content, you certainly will stifle and shorten the exposure to your information, but you'll build a tighter connection. And if you do it well, you might even be able to get permission to send them your next one as well. So the key to this is sit down and work out what's the end result you want to do and what phase are you marketing at. So if your goal at the moment is to reach as many people as you can and build your audience, then you might want to give the information away without registering. If you want to build a tighter community and you want to be able to go back repeatedly to the same information, the same customers, then you might want to ask people to register. And I found this cartoon. I just love the simplicity of it. It looks like someone wearing an art smock with a what do you call them? One of those prickly cactuses. But it's actually meant to be Luke Skywalker. And the whole point was that case studies are such a powerful tool, particularly in business, to show that someone started off with this problem, they went through this process, and they're able to produce these results. And what they're suggesting in the book is that we need to be writing our case studies as stories. And the reason I've chosen the Luke Skywalker cartoon here is because I think if we look at Joseph Campbell's, and he's written the rules of, you know, the hero's journey becomes the archetype of stories, full stop. And Luke Skywalker is pretty much that archetypal story of the hero who basically is living an okay life. He gets challenged. He refuses the challenge, doesn't want to deal with the Empire striking back at him, and eventually he takes up the cause to become a Jedi and he saves the world. And that's part of how you want to be writing your case studies. So look at particularly going back and the customers that you've worked with recently, look at how you can actually turn some of their stories into case studies. And in some cases, you might want to do that in, anonymously. And in other cases, it would really work for you and your customers if you're able to promote their story. Because that way you get to be the hero of the story because you actually help them solve their problem. But also they get some publicity and promotion about what they're now doing and how successful they are. So really consider stories as part of your case studies. The next one is your frequently asked questions. And I think they make a fabulous point in the book here. I think they're really saying that our frequently asked questions is probably one of our most underrated tools for content marketing. And I have to admit, I haven't focused on this myself until I went back over this book. And pretty much what they're saying is, if someone's already gone out and found you and found your content, and then they've come back and they've got a question for you, they're pretty much gone through a number of steps of filtering to say, I'm actually asking these questions for a specific purpose. And usually that purpose is to find out whether to buy your service or not. And when it's presented in that way, I really get that that's such an obvious thing to be doing. If people are asking questions, we should be helping them answer those questions because that's part of the buying process. And the other piece I'd like to add on it, and that's why I chose this image from Chris Madden, is the evolution of humour. We want to add some humour and personality into our frequently asked questions. And it's a bit like those photos of Anne and CC at the start. It's like having more personality is going to engage people closer to us. And particularly, we've read so many dry frequently asked questions. So have some fun with them. And seriously, if you're looking to sell stuff on your site, have them. So that's one of my tasks over the next couple of weeks, is to write a new frequently asked questions list. The next one is video. And the key here is not to be looking at video as a different medium, but again, bring it back to the simple thing that it's about a story with real people in it. And a real person in terms of that you're actually videoing someone, or at least there's someone narrating it, a story or something like that. So really think of about it as the story with real people in it. And you might be wondering why I chose the oil can. Well, the key thing here is the 3-in-1. And I think the beautiful thing about videos, and the same applies for webinars, that if I do a video, I can then present the video to people, or I can strip the audio out of it and use the audio by itself, or I can strip the words out and make it into a transcript, or in the case of a webinar, I can have the slides. And I think that multi-purpose oil, or the multi-purpose video, applies to a multi-purpose webinar, that you want to think about how you can do your content in one way but repurpose it so it gets used in multiple ways. So that's an important thought around your content. Next one, and I alluded to this earlier, that I think a lot of us, for some reason, books have very high credibility, but most of us are not natural writers, and I include myself in that, in the sense that it's easier for me to put a slideshow together and actually just start talking. I can do the writing, but it's actually just really hard work. And it would take me way longer to actually put this whole dialogue together if I had to write all the words than it would if I can actually just put the slides together and then speak to the slides. And the perfect example, and this follows partly out of the webinar as well, that if I do a webinar, then I have an audio recording, which I can then start to use as podcasting. And the analogy here is that podcasting is like having your own radio show. So if you're a kid that grew up and said you always wanted to be on radio, now's your chance. So think about what skills you've got and whether you're a natural writer or whether you're a natural talker. Most of us are natural talkers and less so around writing. So if that's your skill, you might want to consider speaking out loud your ideas or even recording your conversations with customers and then getting them transcribed or at the least publishing them as a podcast. Some of you may be surprised to know that's actually me. I think I'm about 4 years old there. And yes, I did have hair at one point in my life. I don't tend to use photographs, but I certainly know that, for instance, Dale Beaumont around his business blueprints used them beautifully. So whenever you're having an event and there's a group of people meeting face-to-face, you want to take some photos. Because what happens then if you post them online and you tag some people in it, it actually, and what I mean by tag is, if I put that photo up and then put my name next to it, someone can actually find it or share it. And that's one of the most powerful things around photographs, that they're designed to be shared. So if you take a group photo and there's 10 people in it, you can actually tell the people in the photo, oh, I've just tagged you on Facebook or on Flickr in this photo. And it gives people an opportunity to share their photos across it, across the group. So it strengthens the community beautifully. And really all you're doing is posting up the photo as the piece of content and providing the services there that people can then start to share the content for you. So again, I think photographs are a highly underutilized piece of content. And I think the other point on this is, we're not saying when you're doing content marketing that you have to be writing War and Peace or the best-selling book to have your content out there. It could be as simple if you simply took photographs of the people that were involved in your business about what's happening. You could be just sharing them and the funny stories that happen around it. So content marketing can be very simple as well. And all this comes back to is what your audience prefers and also what your expertise is. And finally, this image looks a bit hairy. It's got a funny edge around it. You can tell I'm such a perfectionist around my slides, aren't I? So Facebook and Twitter is not in the content rules book, and I'm not sure about why, but I wanted to add it in there because I think it's a really important tool as well. And I think part of it is, particularly around Facebook, it's not necessarily you generating the content all the time. So if you've got a page in Facebook, as long as you're providing some content and you're leading the conversation, you might find that your 10, 20 or 100 people in your community actually add a lot of contents, add the photos, add the links to their own blogs and that. So you can actually build communities without content as well. And to some extent, something similar happens around Twitter. You don't actually have to be doing a lot of tweeting yourself in terms of your own content. You could be just retweeting and replying to other people's content and forwarding content. So, for example, I might have tweets that promote my own blog, but I could actually just have a tweet stream where all I do is promote the blogs I've just read and that I've enjoyed. So the idea of having user-generated content or a user-generated community is a very interesting one in terms of your content marketing strategy. So include that or at least consider that along the way. Okay, so we are at the point of questions here, but I'm also running a bit over time. So I've got a couple of questions. I may have to answer them separately. Thanks. I'll just answer these fairly quickly. So Taruni's asked, what do you recommend as a format for case studies on a website, spoken in workshops or on podcasts? I think the key here is to look at what's the modality for your audience. What's the way that they want to hear your information? I've been working with someone in Sydney who works with high-level CEOs and that, and the thought of them going onto Twitter is just absurd. And it's more likely that if we need to present the information almost even in printed form to them, or at least access them as a printed document through email, or in some cases where people are time poor, audio might be the preferred one. So there's no one answer to do that. The recommendation I would have is that you put them in as many formats as you can so people can then choose how they want to receive the information. So a request to have a podcast. Yes, we'll look at that. Thanks, Taruni. Podcasts allow me to listen in car and doesn't tie me to the computer. Great point, Louise. because I think a lot of us are time poor, and that was one of the feedbacks I got around Book Wrapper. Some people wanted to sit down and read them. Some people didn't want to read them, because reading means you actually got to sit still at a particular location and not do anything else. Whereas the advantage of audio, as Louise is pointing to, you can listen in your car, you can listen at the gym, you can listen while you're cooking, you can listen while you're walking the dog. So there's a lot of variation there. Love the white socks. Thanks. And Anthony has asked, do you use Facebook or do you use other platforms to post photos? I have to admit I'm not that great at using photos. I haven't really taken advantage of this. I think the two major ones are probably Facebook and Flickr. The advantage of Facebook is that you're more likely to have a community around what you're doing. And I think that's really the key, because unless you're sharing the photos to people who can see them and ideally coming back and commenting or sharing them further, then that's really the key to that whole photograph thing. And I think that's where Facebook beats probably Flickr. And given most of us have some sort of presence on Facebook, I'd be suggesting you go there, Anthony. Okay, let's move on. Onward. So I've come up with a little plan, and so with the Book Wrapper issues, there's always some element where I take directly from the book and others where I make up my own version of things. And in this content combinations thing, I've come up with a little plan of how you can actually come up with a strategy, a visual strategy around your own content combinations. And it takes this basic diagram that I came up with in the nine components, and it basically says, what's the priority you put around each of these? And I've color-coded them. So the one on the left, one that scores only a one in terms of importance or strategy, is light-colored. And on the right-hand side, the one that gets the highest ranking or the most importance is a much darker color. And you'll finish up with a diagram. Oh, I don't know what's happened there. Sometimes when you convert from... it's one of those days today. Sometimes when you convert from Keynote into PDF, it actually completely changes the colours. So you may be seeing the W, which is in some sort of funny old pukey yellow. It's actually meant to be blue, so it missed that by a little bit and actually destroys what I was trying to do here. So the idea was that if I colour code up the blog and the webinar as my two primary modes, you'll actually see them in the darkest blue. And then hopefully you'll see that there's the video and the podcast and Twitter and Facebook are in a next level blue. And then the frequently asked questions, the story and the ebook are in a lighter blue. And you can see, by the way, I don't do much around photographs. So that's an example of how I use it in my business. So ideasmarketing.com.au. Here's another example. Oh, God. Annoying. It really undermines what I was trying to do here. Okay, so this is an example out of the content rules book, where they've done a great job of going through, here's the reasons why you need to do your content, here's the examples of the steps to do specific content, and then here's some case studies on how people have used this. And this one's out of the book, Reynolds Golf Academy. The guy basically does a bunch of videos that he blogs about, and it goes into a series of ebooks. So his main strategy is video, blog, ebook. And to a lesser extent, I think he's sort of got things going around Twitter and Facebook, but he doesn't do much else. So hopefully that gives you that snapshot of where he's focusing and where he's not. Next one, unfortunately, yellow stinks, not pink stinks. Another example out of the book, their primary strategy is blogging, stories, and Twitter and Facebook, and they're doing less around the others. And so if you want to grab your pen and paper, you might want to draw this image now, or another way you might do is grab a screenshot of this slide, or you can also download the slides once they're up in the next day or so. And pretty much you can draw the diagram, podcast, photos, Twitter or Facebook, video, blogs, webinar, frequently asked questions, stories and ebooks. And just give yourself a rating in each of those squares as to which one you're focusing on, or which ones you're focusing on, and which ones are the important drivers for you. It's probably not going to be all nine, because I really think you need to focus on a couple of them, and I certainly endorse what they're saying in the book, that your blog probably needs to be in there somewhere, and it's probably your most important one. So I'd almost start from the point of view, if that was a four, what else would I be contributing to that? And you may not be doing any of the others. You may just be doing a blog, and doing some written content. Ideally, at least you'd want to then be posting that same information out to Twitter and Facebook or even an ebook. And ideally, you'd want to be including some stories and so forth. So you may not play with videos, you may not play with webinars, you may not play with podcasts. Again, it comes back to what your capabilities are and how your audience wants to receive it. So that's a content strategy and how it might look as a visual diagram for you. So I'm sorry to say we've gone a little bit over time here. We've got about 2 or 3 minutes to go, so we're probably going to finish at 1:20. So we're just wrapping up now. So last lot of questions. If you've got any questions, so there's quite a few that have come in. So do you, Rebecca, recommend we buy the book? Absolutely, I do. I think it's a great reference to have on your desk. I've mastered the art of reading ebooks on the iPad while on a treadmill. Wow, Jenny, that's multitasking. I've never seen it. Reading an ebook on the iPad while on a treadmill. I don't know whether I could do that. Anthony saying thanks. Have you ever done a book wrapper session on Daniel Book's Drive? Yes, I think I have. Adventures in the Margin of Error. Not sure whether I have or not. I've done one of his books. Drive. Did we do Drive? I think we might have. I'll talk to you about that offline, Taruni. Post the webinar. Also, have you read Adventures in the Margin of Error by Catherine Schultz? No, I don't know that one. Thanks, Dougal. What about an audience that is less technical? Which one is more important? Good question from Louise there. So which one's more technical? I think most people we can presume. So first of all, we're presuming they can read email. It's probably the presumption. So if they can read email, you could pretty much send your blog to them as an email file. So that's one level of technology. Otherwise, I think you basically produce the content in a way that they can get it. So your ebook could be printed as a physical, like we're going right back to basics here. The ebook, remember, can be printed. You could actually print your blog posts. If you really had an audience that was not technically literate, why not print out your blog posts as a book of the top 20 and use it as a handout book that way? The other way is you might do podcasting, and if someone's really clever on the podcasting, they might be able to get the RSS feed and put it into their iPhone or their iPod, and that all works fine. The other way is you might want to put it onto a USB drive or even a CD service. And I think there's a big counter swing to having content that's in the right mode for your audience. Just because all this stuff's fancy and happening online doesn't mean your audience is. So find out the best way that they want to receive it. And if you have to go back to printed information, just be aware that you may have to organise cost and distribution around that. But it might be a better strategy if that's the way to get your information across. So consider the old classics of CDs and printed paper. Yes, thanks, Jenny. I did Daniel Pink's Whole New Mind, so I'm not sure whether I've done Drive. I've definitely read the book. Lose track after a while. Okay, so let's go forward and just wrap this up now. So if you've got more questions, feel free to shoot them through and I'll answer them directly and post them on the Facebook page. I might even write blogs about it, so that's the other thing. You can ask your audience questions and that becomes a great source of content for you. So what's next? I think sit down and write your content strategy. And if you've got any quick questions about that, shoot a copy of your strategy just in those 9 components and I'll give you some feedback on it if you like. So my email address is jeff@ideasmarketing.com.au, or you can do that via Twitter or our website. If you want to do a one-on-one to get clearer about your content coaching, we can do that, where we can go into the outcomes. What are you trying to achieve? What are your skills? How does your audience want that? And also then coming up with a strategy for you to apply that. If you want a different version, we're going to try this, just throw that out there for next week. Not sure whether this will work, but I'm happy to have 5 people on a webinar next Thursday. It will be a closed webinar, maximum of 5, and we'll talk for an hour about going through those steps of outcome, skills, audience, and strategy for you around your content. So if you want to be part of that, send me an email, jeff@ideasmarketing.com.au, and I do want to keep it to 5 people only so you can all get some attention in that hour. Here's the book, and from what Jenny said, I seriously recommend you buy the book because I think it's a really valuable resource that sits next to you as you're writing some of this. I've been using it to create my webinars, and that's why I was able to say I've ticked off probably about 20 of the 25 tips that they've suggested around that. The next webinar in 2 weeks' time, we'll be looking at planning for next year. In particular, how do you create your best year yet in your business? And particularly, how do we design it as a business game? So obviously, I've used the AFL football. Sorry about that, folks. The next book wrapper one will be in 4 weeks. If you've got any suggestions about books as to which ones you'd like to cover, please let me know. You can go to our Facebook page there or just email me that. Ideas Marketing, if you want more information and copies from our previous webinars, there's the address for that and there's my email address. And a final thought for the day, and somehow I've linked all this content marketing back to Buddha, and he's got this beautiful quote where basically he says, if I have a candle and you have a candle, then and if mine's a light, I can light your candle and my candle doesn't diminish in value. All it does is increase the brightness across the entire room. And I think this is the idea that happiness never decreases by being shared. And pretty much that's the cornerstone of what content marketing is. It's about sharing your content in a way that it adds some value to other people. And if you share to enough people, some of them will come back to you to buy your services or work with you in other ways. So as the Buddha might say, go out and increase happiness by sharing some of what you have to offer for people. So we're done for today. My apologies for being over time. The video slides and the audio will be available in the next 24 hours. So I'll get that up on our website and send that to you also for being on the show today. So thanks for being part of the show and look forward to you being with us next time. Thanks and bye for now.